Well, this is the first of our services in the summer season, which are all-age services, and so tend to take a slightly different and more informal approach to thinking about God's place in our lives. And often I choose a theme for these services. And today, as this is the 50th anniversary of the landing of the moon on the moon, I've chosen that as our theme. So that was 50 years ago. How many people can remember watching that when it happened? Oh, some can, yes. Yep. And those were amazing times, that sense of excitement. Can we have the PowerPoint on, please? So we're going to be thinking about the moon and the moon landing this morning. Just first of all, for a bit of light relief, one or two questions to ask. First of all, how far is it from the Earth to the moon? Is it A, 2,388 miles, B, 23,885, or C, 238,855? How many for A? How many for B? 23,000. How many for C? Yeah, pretty good, yes. 238,000 miles to the moon. So, who were the first two men to walk on the moon? Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin. That's right. So 50 years ago, these were the first two men on the moon. But who was in the command module going around the moon? Michael Collins. That's it. He's often forgotten because he didn't actually get to the moon, but he had to stay in the command module, always with that thought that he might have to fly off and leave them on the moon if they couldn't get off. Now, here's an odd one. What was Buzz Aldrin's mother's maiden name? Was it Rosie Rocket, Marion Moon, or Susie Star? So how many for Rosie Rocket? How many for Marion Moon? And how many for Susie Star? No, it was Marion Moon was his mother's maiden name. One of those odd facts. So how many men in total now have walked on the moon? Is it 2, 12, or 22? 2? 12? 22? It's 12 in total. Now, here's another question. How many of their names can you remember of the other 10 men who walked on the moon? Sorry? John Young, yep. Oh, we've got somebody who's keen at the back there. Alan Shepherd, yep, here we go. Let's get them all up. There they all are. Those are the other 10. And of course, their names are nowhere near as famous, even though they're only kind of one of 12 people who've ever walked on the moon. We tend not to remember them as much as we remember the others. And what are the words on the plaque left on the moon by Apollo 11? Here we go. Is it one, Buzz was here? Is it two, finders keepers? Or is it three, we came in peace for all mankind? I think this one's slightly obvious. We came in peace for all mankind. That was their intention. This was on behalf of all people. And of course, what the moon landing did in terms of watching television, it brought people together all across the world who were fascinated in that one moment of human achievement. So that's just a bit of kind of light relief as we begin to think about this theme for our service this morning. Both of our readings this morning have spoken about the wonder of creation. The last reading spoke about how Christ is at the heart of creation. And Psalm 8, the psalmist has this moment of wonder in the world. When I consider your heavens, the works of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you have set in place, what is man that you are mindful of him? The son of man, that you care for him. Often, going beyond this earth makes us wonder at the splendor of creation, but also makes us think more deeply about ourselves. Somebody has said, we went to the moon and we discovered Earth. We discovered something about ourselves by going to the moon and looking back on it. This is a photograph taken from the Apollo 8 spacecraft, the first spacecraft to circle the moon. And so take a picture of the Earth rising above the moon's horizon. And Jim Lovell, one of the astronauts on Apollo 8, said this: the vast loneliness is awe-inspiring, and it makes you realize just what you have back there on Earth. And Apollo 8 went around the moon on Christmas Eve. And as they were going around the moon, they took the opportunity to read some verses from the Bible, from Genesis chapter 1. And these were the words that were broadcast from the Apollo 8 capsule as it was orbiting the moon.
For all the people back on Earth, the crew of Apollo 8 has a message that we would like to send to you. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. And the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. And God said, let there be light. And there was light. And God saw the light, that it was good. And God divided the light from the darkness.
And God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And the evening and the morning were the first day. And God said, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters. Let it divide the waters from the waters. And God made the firmament, and divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament. And it was so. And God called the firmament heaven. And the evening and the morning were the second day.
God said, let the waters under the heaven be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear. And it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and the gathering together of the waters called these seas. God saw that it was good. And from the crew of Apollo 8, we close with good night, good luck, a Merry Christmas, and God bless all of you on the good earth.
God bless all of you on this good earth. A recognition of the wonder of creation from those who have seen this world from a different perspective. And sometimes we think that kind of science is in competition with religious faith, but they go hand in hand. Many scientists, as they discover more about the wonder of creation, are given a deeper sense of awe and more of a sense of God rather than less of a sense of God. I know there are some scientists who go the other way as well, who end up deciding that there cannot be a God behind this, but there are many scientists who go the other way. I was a teenager when the moon landings took place, and I was fascinated in science at school. And just after the moon landings, this book was published. It's my very tattered copy of Youth Praise, which was a book with some contemporary songs that were contemporary back then, 50 years ago. And one of the songs in this that I enjoyed had these words. And they spoke to me because I was studying science at the time. Christ is the Lord of the smallest atom. Christ is the Lord of outer space. Christ is the Lord of the constellations. Christ is the Lord of every place, of the furthest star, of the coffee bar, of the length of the Berlin Wall, of the village green, of the Asian scene. Christ is the Lord of all. And those words spoke to me as I was a teenager growing up, putting together this wonderful discovery of the world in which we are and the Christian faith, that Christ is the Lord of all, as Paul says, that Christ was with God and in him all things were created and have their being. Our exploration of space and our delight in the world gives us a greater sense of God's awe and wonder and of our place within the world. Now another question. What was the first food eaten on the moon? Was it fish and chips? Was it bread and wine? Was it bacon and peaches? So who's going to go for fish and chips? Nobody's going for fish and chips. Anybody going for bread and wine? We've got some people going for bread and wine. Anybody going for bacon and peaches? Right. Now, here's the interesting thing. It certainly wasn't fish and chips. The first meal that they ate on the moon after they landed and before they actually walked on the moon was a meal of 4 bacon cubes, 3 sugar cookies, peaches, pineapple grapefruit drink, and coffee. So bacon and peaches was the first main meal on the moon. But actually the first food that was eaten on the moon was bread and wine. Because Buzz Aldrin, before he left the moon, about a week before he left, shared a communion service at his church, where he was an elder. He shared a communion service with a few of the members of that church, and he asked them if he could take some communion to share on the moon. So they gave him some of the bread, they gave him a small chalice and a small vial of wine, and he took it with him to the moon. And after the Eagle had landed, the craft had landed on the moon, they went into a period of radio blackout. But before that, he said this. This is the LM pilot speaking. I would like to request a few moments of silence. I would like to invite each person listening in, wherever and whomever he may be, to contemplate for a moment the events of the past few hours and to invite each person listening, wherever and whomever he may be, to contemplate for a few moments the events of the past few hours and to give thanks in his own individual way. And then we went into a radio blackout. But he then said to those who could hear him in Houston, in the radio blackout, he said, I'm going to do it my way, and I'm going to share communion in the way that I know. So he poured the wine into the chalice the church had given him, and he says this, in the 1/6 gravity of the moon, the wine curled slowly and gracefully up the side of the cup. It was interesting to think that the very first liquid ever poured on the moon and the first food eaten there were communion elements, bread and wine. And these are words that he then read as he shared communion, and that he had written on this scrap of paper to remind him of the words. He read words from John 15, I am the vine, you are the branches. Whoever remains in me and I in him, will bear much fruit, for you can do nothing without me." So there on the moon, Buzz Aldrin was at one with all God's people through the sharing of the bread and wine, and we were at one with him, and he was at one with Christ. And even there, we are together in our communion in Christ. And as we share bread and wine later in this service, we will be doing the same thing that Buzz Aldrin did on the moon, to remember in these moments our unity with one another and our union with Christ. So we come to those significant words that were spoken on the moon.
I'm going to step off the land now. It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
One small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. One of those seminal moments and seminal statements. But of course, behind that one man, Neil Armstrong, stepping onto the moon, there were all sorts of people back on the ground on Earth. This is the Mission Control Center in Houston. One fact that I got was the average age of the people who were working in Mission Control at that time. What do you think the average age was? Do you think it was, I think it should be 28, 38, or 48. I thought I'd change that. 28, 38, or 48? 48? So how many for 28? How many for 38? How many for 48? Yeah, the amazing answer is that it was 28. Incredibly young. And the controller who was in charge of their descent onto the moon and had to decide whether or not they should abort their descent onto the moon was only age 26 at the time. That was the kind of responsibility he had. But how many people do you think it takes to put a man on the moon? Somebody did some kind of working out to try to work out how many engineers, scientists, and people had been involved in that enterprise of getting the man on the moon after John F. Kennedy had said at the beginning of the 60s that that was what America was going to do. Was it 4,000, 40,000, or 400,000? So how many for 4,000? How many for 40,000? How many for 400,000? It's actually 400,000. 400,000 people it took to put a man on the moon, they reckon. That's an amazing number, isn't it? But that's what makes these big things possible if you have lots of people working together in a team. This wasn't just about Neil Armstrong taking that step, the giant leap for mankind. Was because 400,000 people had been involved sharing the load. In 1963, John F. Kennedy visited the NASA Space Center. And as he was visiting and walking going along a corridor, he happened to come across a janitor, that's what they're called in the States, who was carrying his broom, sweeping the floor. And John F. Kennedy said to him, "Excuse me, sir, what is your role here?" And these are the words that he says, "I'm helping to put a man on the moon." So even the man who was sweeping the floors at the NASA Space Center felt that he had a part to play in putting a man on the moon. "I'm helping to put a man on the moon." and always the giant leap for mankind is when people work together. And we ought to know that as a church. Jesus has given us an enormous mission as the people of God to make an even more significant change to the world than was made through sending a man on the moon. He's asked us to go into all the world, make disciples of all nations. He's called us to go and share his love, to be his servants. He's sent us to turn this world upside down with his love. That's a huge task that we have. And it's possible, not because any one person can do this, but because you get lots and lots of people doing this and doing it together, and even the person who's holding the broom realizing that they have a part to play in this, it becomes possible. It takes 400,000 people to put a man on the moon, and all of them playing their full part in that work. It takes all of us, where we are, to fulfill God's mission in the world. And it's possible because we can do it together. It's possible because we can all find our place in it. It's possible because we can all give of our best and do what we can to share in this task of mission in the world. There's a verse from the Bible that's on the Mission Control Center in NASA. And it's this verse from Proverbs: without vision, the people perish. And the moon landing was possible because they were given a strong vision, and they had this vision to do it, and they followed it. I think the question is, and now a lot of people will want to argue that all of this moon landing stuff and all of this space exploration is a waste of money. It's spending a lot of money where that money could be spent much better within the world. I'm not going to make a comment on that. I'm just going to leave that in the air. That's a question that different people will have about this.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
What I do want to ask is, what giant leaps for mankind are needed today? And what kind of vision do we need to have to make that possible? Because if it is possible to put a man on the moon and to bring him back, then all sorts of other things ought to be possible in our world that are not being done through lack of vision. If we can put a man on the moon, surely it is not beyond our grasp to be able to sort out diseases like malaria in our world that affect particularly the poorest of our world. If we can put a man on the moon, surely it shouldn't be beyond our grasp to think about ways in which we can alleviate poverty in our world. If we can put a man on the moon, I wonder what other giant leaps for mankind might just be possible if we had the vision and the determination to see it through. And if we all then played our part in making it possible.